Kells continued his drinking, brawling, and bawding for a few more months, as if to spite his old friend and his old friend's new wife. Big Ross was on the verge of severing their partnership when the miracle happened. It was a small miracle, hardly more than 5 feet from toes to crown, and her name was Millicent Redhouse. What Byrne Kells would not do for Big Ross, he did for Millie. When she died in childbirth 6 seasons later, and the babby soon after, even before the flush of labor had faded from the poor woman's dead cheek, the midwife confided to Nell, Ross was gloomy. He'll go back to the drink now, and gods know what will become of him. But Big Kells stayed sober, and when his business happened to bring him into the vicinity of Giddy's saloon, he crossed to the other side of the street. He said it had been Millie's dying request, and to do otherwise would be an insult to her memory. I'll die before I take another drink, he said. He had kept this promise, but Nell sometimes felt his eyes upon her. Often, even. He had never touched her in a way that could be called intimate, or even forward, had never stolen so much as a riptide kiss, but she felt his eyes. Not as a man looks at a friend, or at a friend's wife, but as a man looks at a woman. Tim came home an hour before sunset, with hay stuck to every visible inch of his sweaty skin, but happy. Farmer Destry had paid him in scrip for the town store, a fairish sum, and his good wife had added a sack of her sweet peppers and bustard tomatoes. Nell took the scrip and the sack, thanked him, kissed him, gave him a well-stuffed popkin, and sent him down to the spring to bathe. Ahead of him, as he stood in the cold water, ran the dreaming, mist-banded fields toward the Inners and Gilead. To his left bulked the forest, which began less than a wheel away. In there, it was twilight even at noonday, his father had said. At the thought of his father, his happiness at being paid a man's wages, or almost, for a day's work, ran out of him like grain from a sack with a hole in it. This sorrow came often, but it always surprised him. He sat for a while on a big rock with his knees drawn up to his chest and his head cradled in his arms. To be taken by a dragon so close to the edge of the forest was unlikely and terribly unfair, but it had happened before. His father wasn't the first and wouldn't be the last. His mother's voice came floating to him over the fields, calling him to come in and have some real supper. Tim called cheerily back to her, then knelt on the rock to splash cold water on his eyes, which felt swollen, although he had shed no tears. He dressed quickly and trotted up the slope. His mother had lit the lamps, for the gloaming had come, and they cast long rectangles of light across her neat little garden. Tired but happy again, for boys turn like weathercocks, so they do, Tim hurried into the welcoming glow of home. When the meal was done and the few dishes ridded between them, Nell said, I'd talk to you mother to son, Tim, and a bit more. You're old enough to work a little now, and you'll soon be leaving your childhood behind, sooner than I'd like, and you deserve a say in what happens. Is it about the Covenant Man, Mama? In a way, but I think more than that. She came close to saying, I fear, instead of I think. But why would she? There was a hard decision to be made, an important decision, but what was there to fear? She led the way into their sitting room, so cozy Big Ross had almost been able to touch the opposing walls when he stood in the middle with his arms outstretched. And there, as they sat before the cold hearth, for it was a warm, full-earth night, she told him all that had passed between Big Kells and herself. Tim listened with surprise and mounting unease. So, Nell said when she had finished, what does thee think? But before he could answer, perhaps she saw in his face the worry she felt in her own heart, she rushed on. He's a good man, and was more brother than mate to your da. I believe he cares for me and cares for thee. No, thought Tim, I'm just what comes in the same saddlebag. He never even looks at me. Unless I happen to be with Da, that is. Or with you. Mama, I don't know. The thought of Big Kells in the house, lying next to his mama in his Da's place, made him feel light in his stomach, as if his supper had not set well. In truth, it no longer was sitting well. "He's quit the drink," she said. Now she seemed to be talking to herself instead of to him. "Years ago, he could be wild as a youth, but your Da tamed him. And Millicent, of course." "Maybe, but neither of them is here anymore," Tim pointed out. "And Ma, he hasn't found anyone yet to partner him on the ironwood. He goes a-cutting on his own, and that's dead risky." "It's early days yet," she said. "He'll find someone to partner up with, for he's strong and he knows where the good stands are. Your father showed him how to find them when they were both fresh to the work, and they have fine stakeouts near the place where the trail ends." Tim knew this was so, but was less sure Kells would find someone to partner with. He thought the other woodcutters kept clear of him. They seemed to do it without knowing they were doing it, the way a seasoned woodsman would detour around a poison thorn bush, even if he only saw it from the corner of his eye. "Maybe I'm only making that up," he thought. "I don't know," he said again. "A rope that slipped in church can't be unslipped." Nell laughed nervously. "Where in full earth did thee hear that?" "From you," Tim said. She smiled. "Yar, perhaps thee did, for my mouth's hung in the middle and runs at both ends. We'll sleep on it and see clearer in the morning." But neither of them slept much. Tim lay wondering what it would be like to have Big Kells as a stepper. Would he be good to them? Would he take Tim into the forest with him to begin learning the woodsman's life? That would be fine, he thought, but would his mother want him going into the line of work that had killed her husband? Or would she want him to stay south of the endless forest, to be a farmer? "I like Destry well enough," he thought, "but I'd never in life be a farmer. Not with the endless forest so close and so much of the world to see." Nell lay a wall away with her own uncomfortable thoughts. Mostly she wondered what their lives would be like if she refused Kells's offer and they were turned out on the land, away from the only place they'd ever known. What their lives would be like if the Barony Covenanter rode up on his tall black horse and they had nothing to give him.